a lot of us don't want the police force in Mardi Gras representing the state government, which has introduced very anti-democratic laws about protests.
If you can't fly a pride flag steps from the Stonewall Inn at the National Monument for LGBTQ Liberation, where can you fly it? So we put it back up.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Brian DeShazer. The Europarlament resolves that trans women are women. Police abuse controversy clouds Sydney's gay and lesbian Mardi Gras. And the rainbow flag flies again at Stonewall. Those stories and more this week, now that you've found This Way Out.
I'm Nico Raquel.
And I'm Rhett.
With News Wrap. A summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending February 21st, 2026. The European Parliament has approved a resolution specifically calling for the full recognition of trans women as women, just ahead of the 70th session of the United Nations Commission on the Status of Women, convening in New York City next month. The European Union's legislative body warns attacks by anti-gender and anti-rights movements undermine democracy and target women's and LGBTIQ plus rights. The Europarlament's February 11th resolution calls the inclusion of trans women essential for the effectiveness of any gender equality and anti-violence policies. It stresses recognition of and equal access for trans women to protection and support services. The vote was 340 to 141, with 68 abstentions. The Parliament's resolutions are non-binding, but they frequently inform the EU's negotiating position at global forums. The Europarlament's resolution puts the EU on a direct collision course with the United States at the UN conference, according to US trans journalist Aaron Reed. The Trump administration has officially denied the legal existence of transgender people.
HIV-positive enlistees are once again banned from serving in the U.S. military. The ban was declared unconstitutional in 2024 by a federal district court that called it irrational, arbitrary, and capricious. However, a three-judge panel of the Richmond, Virginia-based 4th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals found what it called a rational basis for the Pentagon's policy. In deference to the military, the judges agreed that excluding people living with HIV from enlisting was necessary to maintain medical standards. Under the February 18th ruling, enlistees are banned even if they have undetectable viral loads, which means that they could serve with no health limitations and cannot transmit the virus. Three individual plaintiffs who could not enlist or re-enlist based on their HIV status filed the original case in November 2022, aided by the queer advocacy group Lambda Legal. The organizational plaintiff is Minority Veterans of America. Lambda Legal has yet to announce its next move. It could ask for a review by all the judges of the Fourth Circuit or appeal directly to the U.S. Supreme Court. Rulings by the Fourth Circuit apply only to the states of Maryland, North Carolina, South Carolina, Virginia, and West Virginia. There is concern that this decision might influence the outcome of similar cases dealing with the military and non-military anti-HIV bias elsewhere in the U.S.
Intersex children are now protected from undergoing unnecessary medical procedures without their informed consent in the Australian state of Victoria. The multi-partisan February 19th vote in the upper house of the Legislative Council was 24 to 15. It passed in the lower chamber earlier in the month. The legislation bans surgeries on babies born with innate variations of sexual characteristics until they're old enough to decide for themselves. There are at least 40 variations of intersex characteristics that impact about 1.7% of the population, according to the national advocacy group Equality Australia. A panel comprised of medical experts and people with lived experience will oversee medical treatment plans for intersex children. Continued consent from parents and caregivers for medically necessary treatments will be required. An array of problems can be caused by unwarranted surgeries on intersex children, such as sexual dysfunction or infertility, urinary tract issues, incorrect gender assignment, and negative self-image in later life. Intersex advocate Tony Briffa of Interaction for Health and Human Rights said, "I felt a decades-long weight lift from my shoulders, knowing that what was done to me will never happen to another child in Victoria." The Australian Capital Territory is the only other part of the country that has similar protections for intersex children.
Anyone in the U.S. state of Kansas who's afraid they may have shared a bathroom in a government building with a trans person can now sue for damages unless the state finds the trans person first. Democratic Governor Laura Kelly's veto of the so-called bathroom bounty bill was overridden by Republican-dominated legislature. Among other provisions, the new law imposes a fine on individuals of $1,000 for not using the bathroom or other sex-segregated facility that conforms to the gender on their birth certificate. Those aggrieved by the presence of a trans person in what they consider the wrong bathroom can sue for that or much more. It applies to state buildings, including public schools and universities. Trans people will also be barred from updating their birth certificates or driver's licenses to reflect their gender identity, and previous updates will be revoked. Long a dream of Republican State Attorney General Chris Kobach. Governor Kelly condemned lawmakers for overriding her veto. Her statement read, in part, "It is nothing short of ridiculous that the legislature is forcing the entire state, every city and town, every school district, and every public university to spend taxpayer money on a manufactured problem. Kansans elected them to focus on education, job creation, housing, and grocery costs."
Finally, what was U.S. Olympic women's ice hockey team captain Hillary Knight's best day, February 18th, when she proposed to speed skater Brittany Bowe, or February 19th, the day of her team's epic gold medal win against arch-rival Canada? Hint, Knight says she was more nervous about the proposal. Knight and Bowe are two of at least 40 competitors who identify as LGBTQ at the Winter Olympics in Milan and Cortina, Italy. The women's ice hockey game between Canada and the United States featured at least 9 lesbians. Knight scored the first U.S. goal to send the contest against Canada into overtime. Teammate Megan Keller then scored the winning goal to secure a U.S. gold medal by a score of 2-1. This was Knight's fifth and final competitive hockey appearance. Her all-time total of 15 goals makes her the leading scorer in U.S. women's Olympics history. Bowe is a speed skating legend in her own right, with 91 World Cup medals, 22 national titles, 6 World Championship golds, 4 world records, and 2 Olympic bronzes, according to NBC News. She unfortunately failed to medal in Milan. Knight and Bowe met 4 years ago at the Winter Olympics in Beijing. The night before her thrilling appearance in the gold medal game, Knight got down on one knee and proposed to Bowe. Of course, she said yes, and the couple posted photos and announced their happy news on Instagram. They already own a home together in Salt Lake City, Utah, where the U.S. speed skating team trains. Their engagement this week was almost a literal storybook ending to their respective Olympic careers. As Knight said on Instagram, "Olympics brought us together. This one made us forever."
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude, for the week ending February 21st, 2026. Follow the news in your area and around the world. Informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon and Lucia Chappell, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm Rhett. Stay healthy.
And I'm Nico Raquel. Stay safe.
You're listening to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. Now it's time to rewind the rainbow. This is the Rainbow Rewind,
where we take a quick look back at the people and the moments that made queer history.
I'm Brian DeShazer.
And I'm Sherry Lunn.
This week, we honor the February birthday of Langston Hughes.
Don't you sit down on the steps, 'cause you find it's kind of hard. Don't you fall now, for I's still going, honey. I's still climbing. And life for me ain't been no crystal star.
Despite not openly identifying as gay during his life, Langston Hughes is celebrated for his subtle, coded queer literary contributions, his intimate friendships within gay high society circles, and his foundational role in representing queer, Black, and marginalized lives.
Now let's rewind to a few February key queer milestones. In 2004, a number of United States jurisdictions began issuing marriage licenses to same-sex couples, including San Francisco, California, Sandoval County, New Mexico, and New Paltz, New York. Unfortunately, the licenses were later nullified.
And in 1967, the Black Cat Tavern in Los Angeles, one of the most well-known gay bars of its time, was the site of a massive protest against an extreme police raid and constant police harassment. Yep, that was 2 years before the more well-known Stonewall Uprising in New York. A reminder that our history is built on courage, creativity, and community.
That's this week's Rainbow Rewind, because remembering our past fuels our pride. I'm Brian DeShazer.
And I'm Sherry Lunn. Stay tuned. More This Way Out is coming up.
Tensions surrounding this year's Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras have been as high as they were in 1978, when a queer protest turned into a police riot known as Australia's Stonewall. Against a backdrop of violent anti-Semitic and anti-Indigenous attacks and the relaxation of police restraints in response to them, parade organizers are faced with twin controversies. The queer Jewish group Dienu has withdrawn from the event due to safety concerns. There are also demands for the expulsion of the New South Wales police contingent after alleged abuses at a recent protest of the Israeli president at Sydney's Town Hall Square. This Way Out's Barry McKay heard from one of the parties in the police debate, a veteran of the 1978 confrontation.
Ken Davison, one of the organisers of the first Mardi Gras in 1978, which we held in solidarity with the struggles in California. You know, the first Mardi Gras was brutally attacked by police, and the body of law that allowed police control over public places and was the main body that was used against lesbians and gay men, as well as protests, is called summary offences. And in the first Mardi Gras, police contained the street and simultaneously demanded people exit, but prevented people exiting and arrested people. Now, what's happened is New South Wales has adopted extreme anti-protest laws, and on Monday, during the visit of President Herzog from the genocidal state of Israel, tens of thousands of people, it was certainly a lot more than the 7,000 or so, were at Town Hall Square. And again, the problem was the police prevented people entering and exiting while simultaneously demanding people disperse without any method of dispersing, and then did charges against people, including people with a lot of incapacity or a lot of older people. And then while people were being restrained, they were being hit badly. So I think the end result of that is that a lot of us don't want the police force in Mardi Gras representing the state government, which has introduced very anti-democratic laws about protests. And it goes back to the original conflict we had with the state government in 1978.
What are your concerns around the policing of the 2026 Mardi Gras?
I think there's two different things. There's one is the police there in uniform and with tasers and guns representing the police force and the state government in the parade, which is difficult if you're a person, you know, who's had a transgender person or an Indigenous person or other people that have had a bad history with police violence or police corruption. The second is the duty of the police as taxpayer funded to facilitate an event like the Sydney Mardi Gras, which, you know, in early years had a lot more people marching but didn't have as many spectators. And so most of the crowd control is done by Mardi Gras volunteers, unpaid. But the police need to manage things. And of course, if there's violent attacks, the police need to be able to respond. But in the past, police have tended to arrest people or beat people up, not necessarily with any justice. And also they're inclined to intensify drug, you know, anti-drug, you know, enforcement during the parade. The last issue is something we don't know, which is because a number of states and the federal government have adopted new laws around what they call hate speech, they're saying that particular slogans like Globalize the Intifada or From the River to the Sea, which is actually the election campaign of Netanyahu's party, or like accusing Israel of genocide, which, you know, a lot of international bodies have, they're saying that that shouldn't be permitted. Now, are the New South Wales Police and Mardi Gras, are they going to enforce that in the parade? And the context is, in the last 5 years, censorship of the parade by Mardi Gras, by police, by the state government, by the sponsors, by the broadcasters, has intensified immensely. So now we're not allowed to satirise any person in public life, for example. Now, all of this, I think, the leadership of Mardi Gras, the majority leadership of Mardi Gras, and others are operating on behalf of the Premier Chris Minns, who's very sensitive to criticism about his failure in drug law reform, failure in equality legislation, intensified anti-protest laws, police violence and corruption. And, you know, this year New South Wales had the highest number of Indigenous deaths in custody ever. So things are not getting better. And also is his loyalty to Israel. So he's very sensitive to try and constrain Mardi Gras to tone down the sex and the politics.
Do you see Australia going in the same direction as the United States?
Look, I think it's more than that. I think certainly Trump is in the vanguard of destroying human rights and democratic rights and democracy. But if you look at a lot of European countries, Britain and France and Germany, Hungary, Poland, it's not something that's simply the United States. So democratic rights, the right to protest, the right to debate, media freedom, all of this is being rolled back. And partly it's on the excuse of defending Israel, but that's not all it's about. It's a general trend. And also the ruling class, for want of a better word, in each of these countries, including Australia, is seeing that their way forward is to exacerbate racism, to campaign on racism, to campaign against Muslims, against Arabs, against migrants, against Indigenous people. That's the main axis of right-wing politics, but not just in Australia, in United States, in France, in Britain, in a lot of countries, what were liberal democracies. So we're entering a new phase. Now, the problem is that sort of racist nationalism is never going to be any good for queer people. Like, nationalism like that, based on racism and chauvinism, is intimately linked with patriarchy and machismo. And there's no way we're not going to be victims of that.
That was 78er Ken Davis giving his thoughts on the participation of the New South Wales Police in this week's Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras Parade. For This Way Out in Sydney, I'm Barry Mackay.
Several of Ken Davis's 78er comrades have called for an independent investigation of the police brutality allegations. The Law Enforcement Conduct Commission is reviewing the complaints.
Every color on the pride flag is a symbol in the sky.
Pride.
And I'm proud to be me every time that I see that pride flag waving high.
The The rainbow pride flag that flew over the Stonewall National Monument was missing the morning of February 9th, but New York activists were not having it. In 3 days, hundreds showed up on a cold and windy day to raise their flag again in defiance of the Trump administration. Paul DiRienzo of WBAI was on the scene.
When I say stronger, you say together. All right. Stronger.
Together.
Stronger.
Together.
Louder.
Together.
What does it mean to you that this flag got taken down?
That the flag got taken down?
Yeah, and the folks didn't want to put it up.
It's trying to erase us. Yeah, can't do that.
How did you hear about it? What did it make you feel when you first heard about it?
When I first heard about it, I thought, doesn't the government have more important things to do than trying to make us disappear?
You think that's what they're trying to do here?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You have a message for the president and this whoever the Secretary of Interior is?
I do have a message, but it can't be delivered in language that I want to hear that I want anybody to hear me speak in.
All right, cool.
You know, I think our community is coming together in a way they always do when we're faced with censorship and oppression that the current political regime has brought upon us once again. And I think mobilizing the power of young people and young voices in a time when our community is under attack has always allowed us to persevere and to
How does this cheery make you feel that they're putting the flag back up here?
Empowered and optimistic for what this year and what, you know, the opportunity for us to let our voices be heard.
I was at home when I read about it.
New York City comptroller and congressional candidate Brad Lander.
Trump does something to make you sick to your stomach almost every day. You know, they call it as that whole like shock and awe or muzzle velocity where you're still trying to focus on how he took over Venezuela or, you know, how people got shot on the streets of Minneapolis, one of whom is, you know, lesbian. So to have this, you know, obviously a flag, well, he wants to do everything he can to make people feel like disheartened and afraid and angry. But what we showed today was we all show up, re-raise that flag, just keep fighting back. Look, these are not normal times. And when you try to step on people and erase their history and deny their rights, you should expect at least, you know, that they're going to fight back. I'm running for Congress right here in this district to bring the fight to Donald Trump and to secure everybody's rights in this city and country.
Very good. Thank you very much. You were discussing, like, the Epstein files and all these people. I mean, the disgust of it is beyond belief. And then they take down the flag here. I mean, the juxtaposition of those two events are shocking to me.
But they're very similar.
The district's U.S. Congressmember Dan Goldman sat on the committee that tried to wring answers about the government's files on pedophile sex trafficker Jeffrey Epstein from Attorney General Pam Bondi.
It's the elevation of Donald Trump and his own view of himself and everyone like him, as opposed to anyone who is not like him. He is trying to protect himself and his cronies who were involved in some capacity with the Epstein files, to the point where they would not even allow victims to come and give testimony because they did not want to help them, they did not want to defend them, and they did not want to have more evidence to potentially prosecute more people. And it's the same thing here. They are now attacking the LGBTQ community. They've been trying to whitewash black history since the beginning. They are coming after every single group that has traditionally endured discrimination or persecution and trying to attack them so they can return to a white supremacist 19th century world.
Disgusting. Beyond disgusting. It's horrible. It's like every day you have to wake up to something else this maniac is doing. No, it's horrifying. I'm scared we're going to have a military state. I'm scared we're turning into a police state and we won't have the freedoms that we had before and that there's no humanity. We have lost humanity. That I think troubles me more than anything else. We can't look at each other and feel empathy for one another.
City officials brought a shorter plastic pole for the new rainbow flag, but the crowd demanded it be the same height as the Stars and Stripes. Some even thought the U.S. banner should be taken down, but some clever protesters jerry-rigged a way to wed the two flags.
What we saw here today was re-raising the flag. The community, you know, wanted to make sure that it was hung properly and strung through the ropes. That's what they did, and I think it looks pretty good.
Manhattan Borough President Brad Heuermann-Sigel.
What's next after this, you know?
Well, I think for us, I think it's a matter of ensuring, you know, that we continue to speak out. I mean, it's not just about raising a flag. It's about taking to the streets, speaking on behalf of immigrants, transgender youth, really making our voices heard, going to court, representing our community where we can. I think for us as a community, it requires constant vigilance. And for New Yorkers, generally speaking, we, you know, appreciate their allyship. And we saw today an enormous response to what was a deplorable act on the part of the White House, you know, removing a flag at the heart of our civil rights movement. If you can't fly a pride flag steps from the Stonewall Inn at the National Monument for LGBTQ liberation, where can you fly it? So we put it back up, and I'm proud of the community for its response.
The Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer of New York.
I am introducing legislation to designate the pride flag as a congressionally authorized flag in America, and that means it can be flown here and everywhere else. And no one can take it down.
The removal of the rainbow flag from Stonewall is the tip of the Trump iceberg. While Schumer's legislative approach and a Lambda Legal lawsuit target the Stonewall incident, another lawsuit filed in Massachusetts challenges the entire Trump agenda of scrubbing unwanted history from national parks.
Doesn't it just fill you with pride?
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. News Wrap was reported this week by Nico Raquel and Rhett and produced by Brian DeShazer. The Rainbow Rewind was written by Sherry Lunn and produced and co-hosted with Brian DeShazer. Barry McKay produced the Ken Davis interview. WBAI reporter Paul DiRienzo provided the on-the-scene sound at the Stonewall Monument pride flag re-raising that was edited by Greg Gordon. Thanks also to Robert Henley. Midnight Oil, Arca, and drag queen Nina West performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks Lee Sloan of Albuquerque, New Mexico, Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley, celebrating their 50th year together, and all the listener donors who make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078 USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon, associate producer Lucia Chappell, and the entire This Way Out crew, I'm Brian DeShazer. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts. And on WGOT Gainesville, Florida, 2MCE Bathurst, New South Wales, Rainbow Radio, New York, New York, and a wide array of community terrestrial internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned.